Thank you very much, Steve, and my gratitude to Steve and Tareem for arranging everything, and to Zeifman's for sponsoring lunch graciously once again. There are two sign-in sheets, one I started on that table and one I started on this table. Please make sure that you do sign in. If we already have your email address, which you will know if you receive the source sheets in advance for this class, then you don't need to write it down. Otherwise, please include your email address. That way you can receive follow-up emails from the sessions. You will also then receive the link to the audio, where if you miss a session, you can download it, and you get the source sheets in advance. So please make sure to sign in. The topic for today, noisy neighbors. It's a practical topic, but as always, please, if you have a specific question, a specific situation, please make sure to ask your rabbi. I'm just providing some general material for contemplation. The noisy neighbor phenomenon occurs in apartment buildings. It occurs in residential areas. It occurs pretty much everywhere. It's sort of the domestic version of road rage. When you have a neighbor who insists on playing the music too loud, and all sorts of other types of disturbances. But I did want to note, with source number one, that you shouldn't always assume the worst about your neighbor. And this is a British story. A noisy neighbor trapped by blaze. A fuming woman called cops about her noisy neighbor, only to discover he was trapped in a burning house. She dialed 999, which I guess is the British version, twice, to complain about banging on the walls, but he was actually stuck upstairs. Luckily, another neighbor, Michael Caldwell, 40, had rushed to help the man who was at the window shouting, "I'm burning, get me out." Mr. Caldwell got onto a neighboring wall, put his fist through the bedroom window to give the unnamed man a chance to breathe. Firefighters rescued him. He went to the hospital to be treated for smoke inhalation. So, moral of the story, dan lekav zchut. You should always assume the best about other people, and if they're making noise, you should call 911. No, if they're making noise, you should maybe consider what else might be involved. But in all seriousness, questions that we do want to address. First, is there anything wrong with disturbing other people by making noise? That's the first question. Within a Jewish law perspective, is there anything wrong with causing that kind of disturbance? Second, let's say I want to start a daycare in my apartment, leaving aside any zoning issues. Let's pretend that the zoning is not a problem. I want to start a daycare in my apartment or some other small business. Would my neighbors be able to protest because of the disturbance? Then after that, if a resident is ill and needs rest, does that create any obligations for the neighbors? Is that a special situation? And then finally, if my neighbor is talking too loud, is there any prohibition against eavesdropping? Anything wrong with hearing what's going on if they're speaking loudly? That's a topic we actually discussed a couple of years ago in this series. We talked about eavesdropping as a big topic. This is just a nuance within it. But we start with the general question, what will Jewish law say about disturbing people by making noise within my own property? I'm not going into their area. I'm playing my music in my property, or let's say, sukkahs is coming, and there aren't that many days available for me to put up my sukkah, and I'm at work and trying to catch up on work, and so I need to put up my sukkah at night. So I decide that at 10 o'clock at night, I'm going to start hammering. Is there any issue is there any issue in Jewish law with disturbing other people when I make noise within my own property? What would you say?
There should be a timeline.
After 10? So, but can you give me something more, something concrete within Judaism, why I shouldn't be allowed to do it? I'm in my own property. I'm not hitting someone. I'm not breaking their property. So, if there wasn't, then this would be a very short cheer. Right? There are actually three separate issues involved, as I understand it, within Jewish law. The first and simplest is what we call Dina Demalchusa, the law of the land. And the law of the land says, under various circumstances, you're not allowed to make noise. I chose Toronto's municipal code, and it's section on noise, section 591. If you take a look at source number two, one line from it, no person shall make, cause, or permit noise or vibration at any time which is likely to disturb the quiet, peace, rest, enjoyment, comfort, or convenience of the inhabitants of the city. So the municipal code disagrees. The municipal code says that it doesn't matter the time of day. However, the reason why 10 o'clock is cited is because then you have this very long code afterwards to define when people have a right to expect silence and when they don't have a right to expect silence. But the rule is, if there's anything that is considered to be inappropriate, it doesn't matter what the time of day is, and it doesn't matter that you're within your own property, it will not be allowed. So I'm not sure the municipal code actually states decibels, because there are a whole bunch of appendices where it deals with certain subtopics. The code itself, I don't think, specifies decibels. But we're going to come back to the code a little bit. There's more to say in that regard. But that's number one, basic law of the land. But beyond the law of the land, there are two other factors within Jewish law. And one is financial. It's a financial issue. Because if I use my property in a way that generates noise, disturbing the people next door, I affect the way that they are able to use their property. For example, they want to sit out in their backyard, but I have a big party going on, and the noise is actually keeping them from use of their yard. I have now done something to damage their property. If you take a look at source number 3, this comes up in a topic called Hezek Re'iya. Anybody familiar with the term Hezek Re'iya? What does it mean?
By looking into somebody's privacy.
Right. Damage caused by looking into somebody else's property. That's Hezek Re'iya. And the rule is, I'm not allowed to look into somebody's yard. I'm not talking about where you're walking past and you happen to notice something, but I'm talking about intentionally looking, because I want to see what they're doing in their yard. And there are various reasons that are presented for it within Jewish sources. And one of them is what we're about to see here. Source number 3, Rabbi Yosef Karo, author of the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, said the following: Lo yiftach adam chalon lachatzer chavero. I am not allowed to create a window in my wall that will allow me to look over into somebody else's yard. Let's say there's a yard that actually is jointly owned. I have access to it and somebody else has access to it. And I say I want to create a window from my home so I can look out into the yard, which I am a part owner of. Nonetheless, the rule indeed is ma'akev alav shutfo, the partner is allowed to prevent me from doing so. Because I'm going to look out at him from that window. And what's the issue of looking? So that's what I brought you in source number 4. Rabbi Yeshua Falk explained. Mishun desham hare'iya mitzad atzma ein osin ba'en hezek, ela shego remes hezek. Kegon shechavero lo yase asakav b'chatzer mikalach habusha mimenu. He says, seeing doesn't actively harm, such that you could say to the guy, you owe me money now because you harmed me in some active way. However, it indirectly causes harm, because this fellow isn't able to use the yard for his business. If he knows you're looking into the yard, he's not able to do whatever he wants. And we say business here, we don't mean financial business. But he's not able to do what he wants to do. He wanted to be able to sit out in the yard, and now, because you're going to be looking in, it's something that disturbs him. And we're not talking about where he is uniquely sensitive, but it's something which bothers people in general. So by limiting his use of his yard, you're actually guilty of diminishing his property. And on that basis, it can be argued that making a lot of noise, such that you keep somebody from using his yard, again, assuming he's not being hypersensitive, assuming this is something that normally disturbs people, would be a second reason why one would not be allowed to make excessive noise. Clear? On the second point? The first point is law of the land. Second point is financial. You're diminishing his use of the property. But then the third point is personal, which is causing this person anguish, which is an issue, even if you don't have physical assault or property damage. I brought you an example of this in source number 5. Source number 5, also from the Shulchan Aruch, from the Code of Jewish Law. Hamavis es chavero, one who frightens another. He says, you frighten somebody else, he can't take you to court. He can't sue you in Beis Din, in rabbinical court, and say, I want damages because you shocked me. You're only liable in the heavenly court with God. even if the person becomes sick, there is no liability within court. It's just inappropriate to do, and so God will take care of it. V'hu shelo nagabo. That assumes that you didn't actually touch him. Once you touch him, then all bets are off. Kigon, so he says, can you give me an example of how you might frighten somebody? Kigon shetzak lo me'al chorav. You shouted right behind him. Oh, shenir lo ba'afela. Or you suddenly popped up in the dark. Yeah, you shouted boo, whatever it is, and that way you scared the person. So that in and of itself is prohibited. And similarly, one would not be allowed to do other things that will cause people anguish, such as preventing somebody from sleeping. Right? The term in Hebrew for this is gezel shena, stealing sleep is the usual term for it. They tell the story about Rabbi Chaim Brisk, who was the head of a major yeshiva. And he was approached by one of the students in the yeshiva who asked him, he wanted to know, where does it say anywhere in the Torah that there's such a concern as gezel shena, stealing sleep? Where does it say anywhere that you're not allowed to keep somebody awake? Let's say they're talking in the dorm or whatever it is. Where can you find any such prohibition in the Torah? So he thinks about it. He says, not in the Gemara, not in the Rambam, not in the Shulchan Aruch. It's all going through his head, you know. Nope. What's left? V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, right? Love your neighbor as yourself, right? Which is a verse, and it counts as law. And no, if somebody's trying to sleep, so you wouldn't be allowed to keep them awake, and that's one source for it. Another source for it is the verse, v'lo sonu ish es amiso, which means, you shall not abuse others. And that's a verse that is used commercially abusing somebody else, overcharging, that sort of thing. And it's also used in terms of verbal abuse. That's actually the source for the biblical prohibition against verbally abusing somebody, as the Gemara explains, the Talmud explains, that onas devarim, verbal abuse, is also prohibited. So the same thing is true here. So Rabbi Yaakov Yeshaya Blau, I did not bring it on here, but Rabbi Yaakov Yeshaya Blau, author of the contemporary work Pitchei Choshen, which deals with financial issues, he passed away about 3 years ago, but he was a judge on Israeli courts for many years, says that on this basis, there would be an obligation to try to avoid making noise that is not normal accepted noise in your apartment within your house. So he says, for example, if you live on the upper floor, you should wear slippers at night. That's it. He didn't live in Canada where they take off their shoes anyway. But he says a person who has tasks to perform, things that he wants to do, moving furniture around, he says even if it would be inconvenient, it is that person's responsibility to take the initiative and shift those things to times when you won't be disturbing the neighbors. That's what he writes. I feel like I feel like I'm to a certain extent presenting something that is so at odds with the way people normally live their lives that as to be unrealistic. But that's the way that the law is presented. Meaning, I don't wait for the neighbor to complain. According to what he's saying, I have to think to myself, is this something that's going to disturb? And if so, not engage in it. Is this the way people normally do business? No one who answers will be considered to be responding about their own practices.
I've always told my kids, anticipate the others.
Good, because that's exactly what he's saying. So he talks about a number of practical cases. He says, for example, if you have an air conditioner that runs very loud, I was going to bring it on here. I see that I didn't. But if you have an air conditioner that runs very loud or a furnace that creates a very loud noise, so he says it's part of living that people have air conditioning units. It's part of living that people have furnaces. And if it's within the norm, so that's fine, and no one is able to protest. It's part of living. However, you should make every effort to muffle it to the extent that you are able. He talks about car alarms. So the Toronto Municipal Code actually has a rule for car alarms. You know what the rule is? The maximum length of time your alarm can go? 5 minutes. I think I probably would have taken a hatchet to his car after two. But the Toronto Municipal Code says that car alarms are fine as long as they last no more than 5 minutes. So he discusses it and he says, well, on the one hand, a car alarm is normal. You need it to protect your property. On the other hand, he says, they often go off for no reason at all. Imagine that. It's not only here. And see, but he says, this is normal. Everybody has them. It's fine. He's willing to accept that. He also talks about loudspeaker announcements. And he says not to make loudspeaker announcements at night. Now, I don't know why you need a loudspeaker, but in general, within your property, no loudspeakers at night. Interestingly, this is a case where the municipal code is more strict. The Toronto Municipal Code says no noise at any time. It says no loudspeaker that will, quote, project noise beyond the lot line of the property from which the noise emanates and into any street or public place. According to this, loudspeakers are not allowed, and it's at any time. It's 591.2.1. If you want to look it up, I gave you the link in source number 2, so you could you can check the municipal code.
Camps.
Sorry.
Camps.
Right. Right. Summer camps with neighbors would be an example where this comes up. Correct. So that's just the basics, right? We note that there are three issues within Jewish law. One is obeying the law of the land. Second is not to reduce his use of his property. And third is the personal. You're not supposed to cause people anguish. What was the Google line, right? Don't be evil, something like that. That's what we're talking about. So let's get to a practical case then. I have an apartment. I'm in an apartment building. I want to start a daycare in my apartment. Daycares will necessarily involve noise of two kinds, right? What's the noise involved in the daycare? Kids screaming in the apartment and?
Teachers screaming at the kids.
That's all within the first category, Steve. Sorry? The traffic, right? The traffic as they go in and out. So, would you say that somebody, assuming zoning allowed it, we're not dealing with a zoning problem, but I have a neighbor down the hall who is annoyed about the fact that I want to start the daycare. Are they able to prevent me from doing so? What would you say?
I don't see how you could detach it from the zoning aspect. Yeah. Because the zoning would specifically, if it was zoned for that, it would be basically saying that it's something that would be a permissible amount of noise or...
What's the default in zoning? Is the default yes or is the default no until we say you're allowed? The default is no unless the zoning law says yes.
It's what expected in normal circumstances. But in daycare is sort of an isolated situation. Obviously, no one, when you rent them, you don't expect that to happen. And you don't anticipate that.
Right.
But if it's something that it's common, then you can have it.
So that's exactly where we have to go with this. Take a look, please, at source number 6. A Mishnah in Bava Basra. This is one of two key sources. The second key source is going to be number 7. It says, Chanut Shebechatzer. There's a store in a yard. The store in this yard existed already before. Not someone is opening a store, but the store was already there. Yachol limchos v'yado. So you're allowed to protest. V'lomar lo, and to say to him, Eini yachol lishan mikol hanichnasin mikol hayotzin. You're allowed to protest, even though the store is already there, and say, this traffic is keeping me from sleeping. People are making noise whenever they go in and out. However, if some guy has a business where he makes tools, and he does it out of his house, if someone makes tools, he's allowed to go sell them in the market. I can't say to him, don't manufacture the tools in your apartment. He's allowed to hammer away in the apartment making the tools, and I can't complain as long as he sells them out in the marketplace.
So traffic is a much greater issue than noise.
Right, so that's what it sounds like. Traffic, no. Traffic is a problem. Hammering is fine. How in the world would you explain that? Yeah?
Traffic has nothing to do with the actual situation that's supposed to be watching kids. And the hammer, the fact that he just works, that's the actual work itself.
So you would distinguish between his work and that which is ancillary.
Exactly.
Even though the work can't happen without the ancillary. I mean, you can't have a daycare without children showing up at the door.
No, we're talking about traffic.
Yeah,
or you mean talking about physical traffic.
Yeah, I don't need cars. I mean
okay, that's actually a separate item. This is actually his field itself.
Okay, that could be.
Were both items anticipated, or was it that the
story, you knew that he had that there before, whereas the traffic, you didn't expect a lot of traffic, and now all of a sudden there's an unusual amount of traffic.
So some of it is going to have to deal with expectations. I'm going to come back to that. Some of it is going to have to deal with what is essential for him and what is not. Yes?
Isn't the distinction between the two where the transaction arises? One is arising at the store in the yard. The other is transpiring in a market.
Yes.
Not at the location where the tools will be made. So I think there is differentiating between...
Hang on. The where the store is in the yard, so in other words, it's right outside my house, right? The way their urban design was that you had a bunch of houses that would surround a common courtyard. So he's hanging out in the yard outside, and that's where he is selling his goods, and therefore there's noise right outside my house. And there we're saying I can protest the traffic, this noise from the people.
Actual right. Transaction in terms of money exchange would probably arise.
Right.
I don't know if this is really a distinction, but that's how.
So I'm going to come back to what's normal and where the normal commerce goes to. I think you're hinting at something that we're going to have to see here. But right now, what we're seeing from here is a distinction. Certain things are grounds for protest, certain things are not. We've already suggested a few reasons to distinguish between them. We're going to see more in a couple of minutes. But first, we have to see one more source. Take a look at source...
Just clarify. He's protesting the actual making of...
Correct. He's not protesting the sale in the market. Right.
That's what I'm saying, is a distinction.
Yes, that's correct. Let's take a look at number 7. Two people have a shared yard. It doesn't mean literally they're living in the yard. They're living in houses that abut the same yard. One of them wants to become a doctor, is usually the way we render rofe. I added in the parentheses, Rashi actually says this is a moel here. This is which certainly involves noise. The uman, a blood letter. Gardi, a weaver, Malamde Tinokos, a teacher. So Chavera Ma'ake Valav, the other resident, is allowed to protest. This is not a competition issue of I am in the business, I don't want you entering the business. That's discussed in the same section in Baba Basra, but it's not this. What he's saying, and this is codified by the Rambam, by Maimonides, it is brought in the Shulchan Aruch as well, the Code of Jewish Law, is we are identifying these trades as nuisances, and it is understood that the reason these are a nuisance is because they produce traffic. People are going to, once you set up shop, you're a bloodletter, that means that people are going to show up, and people are going to be traveling through the yard, making a lot of noise, and that's going to disturb. It's interesting that in the first source, in number 6, it mentions sleep explicitly. In number 7, it did not. Nonetheless, it's understood that that's the general issue. Now, one note that's sort of a side note, but interesting to realize, it mentions teacher as one of the trades that you're allowed to block. There's discussion about what if somebody's engaged in a mitzvah? What if they're doing a mitzvah? And the Talmud actually says we distinguish between a teacher who is teaching Torah, and you can't prevent that, maybe, and a teacher who is teaching just general subjects, and that you would be allowed to protest, because one is a mitzvah, and one is not necessarily a mitzvah. That's what's suggested there. So that letter of Moshe Sofer, the Chasam Sofer, to make an interesting point. He said, earning a living is a mitzvah, in and of itself. So therefore, all these people, with all their different careers, are engaged in a mitzvah. So how are you allowed to prevent it? Let's take a look at source number 8. He says, "Hakaymalan bizman azel mizonos devar mitzvahu." He says, our approach is that indeed earning a living is a mitzvah. The Rama mentions it, others mention it, there are many sources to support it. So then why is it that we don't say they can make as much noise as they need in order to perform this mitzvah? So his answer is, because it depends on whose mitzvah it is. The teacher who is teaching Torah is carrying out something that is the responsibility of the community at large. Everyone is obligated to make sure that the children of the community receive a Torah education. Therefore, the mitzvah is your mitzvah also, and you can't protest the noise that's being generated. Whereas, this guy's mitzvah of earning a living is his problem. That's not my problem. Let him earn a living without disturbing me. I don't have to suffer because he's doing his mitzvah. I mentioned it also because I gave the case of building the sukkah before. So the sukkah is my, the sukkah is not everybody's mitzvah. The sukkah is his mitzvah. Let him build it at a time. He's not going to disturb me. That would be the distinction. I saw a hand somewhere here. Yes,
that's why Rashi pointed out that it was a halal instead of a regular doctor. That he's carrying out someone else's mitzvah.
As opposed to the doctor, who's also doing a mitzvah.
But this is a mitzvah for...
Oh, you think that's an interesting idea. I don't know. I haven't thought about that. What Tzvi is suggesting is, Rashi mentions the moel, right? Rashi says, rofe means a moel. So the moel is doing a mitzvah, which really is the mitzvah of, you know, the baby's father. That's who has the mitzvah of making sure that this child gets a bris. Whereas the doctor is engaged in a mitzvah that is a communal mitzvah, looking after people's health. So maybe that's why Rashi says moel is what it means and not doctor. It's an interesting thought. I don't know. It's an interesting idea. To a certain extent, all mitzvot are communal in the sense that we have this concept of arevut, of joint responsibility for each other. That's what you're going to say.
Exactly.
But on the most basic level, there is a person who is responsible, and that's the individual with whom it starts. It's an interesting question, because you're right. Eventually, it does fall upon everybody, including the education. It's technically not everybody's first job is with parents. Yes?
Coming back to number two.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we say that there is such thing as accepted practice? For example, we talked about putting up your sukkah.
Yes.
Maybe, say, 2 hours or whatever it is. And you find people building new homes and their renovations going on, and the noises of lawnmowers, etc., etc. So really, putting up the sukkah, which just involves maybe banging a few nails, would that not come under accepted practice of noise, which means of noise, because you are putting up a structure... And you are making noise. It's like everybody else is doing anything which makes noise.
Right. So
with number two, even then, as far as the municipal code, it's being very inadequate because it's not
taking
all these factors into account.
Right. So the municipal code point, again, as we had said before, the code goes on. This is just an opening line. The code goes on from here to define what is acceptable, what times of day it's acceptable, and so on. We shouldn't take this as a blanket statement. It's always out. And we said from Jewish law, we said the car alarm, the air conditioner, whatever it is, there is such a thing as accepted. That is true. So, yeah.
I just want to know, it seems to me that the issue is not really noise.
Yeah.
Because the things that they've selected,
yeah,
are not necessarily about noisy people. It seems it's just traffic going through the yard.
Right. Well, it's the noise of the traffic. It's the hubbub of people going in and out that they're talking about. It's not the... There is a separate concern called Riboy Derech, that one is making it inconvenient for people to use the yard because as there are people going through, then he has to go around. But no, this is focusing on the noise issue that's involved. So based on what we've said, it sounds like I can stop him from, you know, opening up Tzvi's Mila shop or whatever, I could also say no daycare. Because you're disturbing, you know, by creating the noise of the people going in and out, the traffic issue. We still haven't explained the difference between hammering and traffic, but that's what we're coming to. Zev?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, the nuisance seems to be sleep.
Yes, primarily, but not exclusively.
Aren't there, you know, even if you have a siesta, there must be limits.
Yes. So Zev points out, if we're concerned about sleep, are you really able to say to somebody, don't make noise, it's 11 in the morning and I want to sleep? Right? At what point, you know, what are the limits? The answer may be culturally dependent, mind you. Siestas in different societies, college dorms, like there are different rules for when people sleep, depending on where they are. I would venture to say that in the college dorm, you're waking up more people at 10 a.m. than you are at 3. So, you know, we have to think about that a little bit.
Restrict our discussion to noise, we could easily define the parameters here by imagining our neighbor is deaf. Would they be disturbed by a particular activity if they did not hear it? So are we discussing only noise or other kinds of disturbance?
Right, and right. So that goes back to what I had said before, that it's primarily a noise concern, although there is discussion about creating other inconveniences via the traffic, such that the deaf neighbor would mind those too. There is that piece of it as well. Yes?
This is answered by mine. Six basically says the difference between storing yard
Yep.
And some of the tools to make those stuff in the market. So if you read 9, people normally practice their craft in their homes. So why not do politics on other people? It says we've never affected the market. The difference is the store is in the 6 says the store is actually in the yard, which means everybody's practice there. And the person that's selling, it's not the noise of making the tools. It's the noise of selling.
Right, so that's exactly where we're going. That's exactly where we're going. That's why 9 is there. But I want to use it to address the following question. Complicating matters. We've said that the neighbors are able to protest if you're going to introduce traffic by starting a new business. What happens if the business was already there and the neighbors say, we dealt with it until now, but we're tired of dealing with it. At this point, we want you out. The noise is too much. The traffic is too much. You've become successful as a business. Now there's more traffic. You have a different type of a clientele now. You added sushi, and now you're getting this kind of clientele instead of that kind of clientele. We no longer want you here within the yard. Are they able to protest? Or just, you know, we thought we were fine with it. So that's the question, is will we say you have what's called chazaka? Meaning, in this case, what chazaka would mean is you had already established your foothold there and no one can kick you out. Or will we say, not necessarily, your chazaka may not extend this far. So take a look at what we have here, because this takes us back to the question of why hammering is allowed but traffic is not. And I want to show you 3 different reasons to differentiate between them. And then based on that, we'll answer the question of whether your chazaka works or not, whether having been there before will help you. The first approach is indeed source number 9. Rabbi Menachem Meiri, writing in Provence, said that the difference is between what is normally done in your home and what is not normally done in your home. And in his day, in Provence, in the 13th century, and he's saying this was true 1,000 years before that, Talmudically, people who were craftsmen worked out of the house. They didn't have a special facility that they rented somewhere or, you know, that they owned somewhere where they would set up all their tools and then they would leave their shop and come home at night. That wasn't the way they did it. You worked in your house and that was the norm. And therefore the neighbor can't protest because your trade, you know, you may be a scribe and therefore you're not making a whole lot of noise. I'm a blacksmith. That's what I do. That's in terms of the hammering. Whereas traffic to sell things, there's a central market in the city, and that's where people sell. And you're not supposed to be selling goods out of your house if that's going to then disturb your neighbors. That's Meiri's answer to this problem, and that's one approach. Based on that, apply that to the daycare, and what would he say about the daycare? Does the daycare then have the ability to function? No, because daycares are not normal for apartments. That's not normally the place that people, I think, that's not normally where daycare functions. Am I right about that? Am I wrong about that?
In this country,
actually,
in Israel,
actually here too. Yeah. Majority are in homes.
It's all homes.
Okay, then I stand corrected. Then we'll be fine.
The laws are actually getting a lot stricter as we speak right now. But,
yeah. Right, that's true. They're changing the rules on this. So this may...
They do not want daycares in homes.
Right. Your mileage may vary. Not only do you need to ask a rabbi, as I said at the beginning, you also need to ask your lawyer.
Sometimes your accountant.
And your accountant. Okay. The second argument for distinction is source number 10. And that is looking carefully at where things are going on. In terms of the 2 cases, the Rabbi Yeshua Falk, in his Sma, his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, says that in the case of the hammering, it's in his own house, or it's in his own store, whatever it is. The traffic, on the other hand, is going on out in the yard. The traffic noise is from people coming to his house. He may have a right to do whatever he wants in his house. He doesn't have a right to set this up in the yard where it's disturbing my use of the yard. Right? It's diminishing my use of the yard. I can't go out there. There's too much noise going on. So his argument is, if it's indoors, it's fine. The problem is the hallway. And therefore, applying it once again to this daycare that had been there for a while, if the noise is coming from the hallway, he doesn't establish chazaka. He doesn't have a right to that. Even if at some point he was allowed to do it, that will not create for him an ongoing right. And then third, the last of the distinctions is from Rabbi Yaakov Lorberbaum, the Nesivos, in source number 11. He says, traffic is fluid. It's not something that you can say, today there is this number of people, and it's going to be the same number of people tomorrow and next week and next month. That's not the way it works. And so he says, you can see it there, I'm just going with the English in the interests of time. He says, you can object regarding traffic because each day there are new arrivals, new departures. There are people who weren't there before. They have different habits. They have different noise levels. And therefore, the chazaka is ineffective. You can't say, well, we always were allowed to do this, therefore we continue to be allowed to do it. It's like smoke, he says, if someone is running a grill. So maybe you were okay with the grill yesterday, but the smoke is going to have different effects. It's going to be more irritating, less irritating, based on any number of factors on any given day. And therefore, you're entitled to say, yesterday I was fine with it, but no, now I am not fine with it. So looking at this in terms of the daycare, Meiri, who says that it's about what's normal, so it'll depend on whatever is normal. Is it normal for them to have apartments with daycares or not? Sma, Sefer Meirat Einayim, Rabbi Falk, in source number 10, said that it's about what's going on outside versus inside. If the noise is really just from inside the house, you're out of luck. If the noise is from outside, then you can protest. And then this third view, Rabbi Yaakov Lorberbaum, who said that traffic noise really is different because it fluctuates, it changes. So I think the same thing is going to be true regarding the daycare. Right? Kids on some days are great, and kids on other days are great in other ways. The noise level is going to vary from day to day, and therefore you could make the argument that, no, I used to be able to put up with it, but now I can't. Yes?
What if the, not the person making the noise, but the neighbor's situation changes, i.e. he becomes ill, has a baby, wants to sell his house?
So that's exactly where we're going with this. And you gave three cases. Ill, has a baby, wants to sell his house. Selling his house, I think you're out of luck. In other words, if you allowed a chazaka until now, right? You can't suddenly wake up and say, "Well, now it affects me in a different way." Right? I don't think we recognize. But the first two is exactly where I'm going now. The case of illness. If you take a look at source number 12, the story of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef had palm trees. Bloodletters apparently like to work under palm trees. You have to know more about phlebotomy to know why, but they like to work under the palm trees. So they came and they sat underneath them and plied their trade. Ravens came along and were eating, whatever the blood had dripped on. And then they flew into the trees, and they sat in the trees, and of course damaging the fruit by being up in the tree. So Rav Yosef says to him, "Get rid of the ravens. I don't want the ravens in my trees." Abaye, student of Rav Yosef, turns to him and say, "That's indirect harm. Remember the rule we've said on other occasions. A person who engages in harming somebody else indirectly is doing something wrong, but it's not actionable in court. I can't claim anything from him if the harm he's causing me is indirect. In this case, the bloodletters set up shop. The ravens came to them. The ravens went up into the tree. Their harm is really indirect." So Abaye says, "It's indirect." To which Rabbi Yosef replies, "It's still prohibited, even if I can't take him to court. Nonetheless, it's still prohibited." To which the objection is, "But the bloodletters had a chazaka. They did it yesterday and the day before, and you didn't protest. How are you able to protest now?" To which the answer is, Rabbi Nachman quotes Rabbi Bar Avuah to say, "There's no chazaka in harming others. You're not able to say, well, I hurt you yesterday, and you didn't complain, therefore I'm allowed to hurt you today." He says, that's not allowed. To which they challenge and say, "Wait a minute, that's only for certain types of harm, like the smoke case, or if he sets up a latrine next to your property. There are certain things that you can object to any time, but not everything." To which Rabbi Yosef says, "I'm a delicate person," which he says several times in the Talmud in various circumstances. He says, "I have a delicate constitution. And yeah, the ravens being in my trees and ruining my fruit, that bothers me the way that smoke bothers other people." That's Rabbi Yosef's statement. And based on that, if you take a look at source number 13, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, in the Ashkenazic commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Code of Jewish Law, says that when we say that no one can protest what a person does in his house, that's only regarding healthy people, some say. But if people are ill and the noise is hurting them, then they are able to protest. So if someone is sick, even if you'll say, well, he's hammering in his house and hammering is allowed, not if there's somebody ill next door. So he says, yes.
Question. Back on 10. Very interesting. Neighbors can help protest hammock and house next door as opposed to earlier cases of trapping the noise and joining the owner's yard. If, let's say the house, for example, is a semi or a townhouse, that is jointly owned. Does the same thing apply to the yard and to the house?
Interesting question. If you have people who are in the same building, right, they may live in separate rooms, and that we've artificially divided up as these are your rooms and these are your rooms, but fundamentally they're in the same building. I suspect it will be a matter of popular perspective. How do people view this? Do they view them as separate residences, or do they view them as being part of the same building?
Or something, but they're still, or apartments.
Right. But the issue is not the name on the deed or the lease. The issue is, do we view it as one structure or two?
Well,
in other words, they don't have access to his apartment. But I think we're picking up on the wrong half of the sentence. In other words, it's not so much the issue of the ownership as access to the space. I think that's really the key. But I want to make sure to make clear what Rabbi Yisroel of the Ramah is doing in source number 13 when he says this. Yeah?
I just wanted to understand one thing. By making excessive noise, are you committing an avera, or is it that you have to provide compensation?
Good question. So is this a case of you're harming somebody else and therefore morally it's wrong and this is a bad thing to do? Or is there a price that you have to pay? Right? It's like the question we've asked on other occasions. When there's a law that says that, that when it says fine for parking, right? So I assumed that meant fine for parking and I parked there. So do we view the fee that I have to pay as, so to speak, the price? In other words, if you want to park there, it's going to cost you $50. Or do we say that this is actually something that society says is a wrong thing to do and we're going to punish you? So based on what we said before, that I am required by Jewish law not to cause anguish to somebody else, I think the answer is it's a moral thing. It's not only a matter of finances. It's actually a wrong thing to do.
Is that hafta reyecha kumacha mitzvah in the Torah, or is it just a greater state of being?
Right. So it seems very clear that it's actually presented as a mitzvah. It becomes the underpinning of various laws. It's not simply a nice idea, but it does have, it has teeth to it in law. So in terms of Ramah, Rabbi Yisroel's statement about the person who is ill, there are three caveats. I didn't bring it on the sheet because I knew we wouldn't have enough time to see it all inside, but I'm going to explain. One caveat is from Rashba, writing on this passage in the Talmud. Rashba, Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Aderet, writing in the 14th century, said, the person has to be known to be ill. Separate from this. In other words, if he simply says, my heart, my whatever, I need to rest, but we have no knowledge of an illness for this person beyond that, then what he says is irrelevant. There has to be a track record that we know this is legitimate. That's number one. Number two, the Pitchei Choshen points out, the patient has to have lived there before the proprietor of the business got there. This person who is ill has to have lived there before. You could imagine otherwise a terrible situation. A guy has a business going for 15, 20 years. Neighbor moves in. And one day says, I'm feeling terrible. You have to shut down your business. Right? I mean, that's what you theoretically open him up to. So at least the guy has to have been a resident there before. And then the chazak...
He doesn't have to have been sick there before.
No, he doesn't have to have been sick there, but he has to at least have been a resident there. And then the Chazon Ish, Rabbi Avraham Yeshaya Karelitz, adds that if what you're doing is something people normally do in a dwelling, not a business, but just normally do in a dwelling, also the patient next door really doesn't have the right to block you from doing it. You could end up in a situation, again, because imagine if you have somebody who has a chronic illness that sometimes is better and sometimes is worse. He's going to have to shut down what he's doing for weeks at a time because it's getting worse. And then the neighbor calls him up and gives him, so to speak, the weather report and says, I'm feeling better today. You can go do your work. It's absurd. So if what the person is doing, the business is doing, is normal, then you can't stop him for this sudden illness that occurred. Let me just make sure that this section is clear before we go to eavesdropping. So normal as defined, but yes, you're going with the Mi'iri standard, yes. What people normally do in a house.
But it could be a blacksmith.
If that's normal, assuming that's normal. Again, in Provence in the 13th century, or in Babylon in the 3rd century, maybe. I'm not so sure that you can get away with being a blacksmith in a house today.
Of course.
But yeah. So again, what we've said is, first we identify the three problems with disturbing others with noise. Law of the land, the financial issue of limiting their use of their space, and the personal issue of causing them pain and anguish. We said that people are entitled under Jewish law to stop others from starting a business where the traffic noise is going to keep them from sleeping. We said that that is codified as Jewish, that is actually brought within Jewish law. We noted that if they're engaged in a mitzvah that's a collective mitzvah, that may change. That's a unique case. We said that we allow the hammer, but we don't allow the traffic, and we gave three different reasons for that, whether it's because the hammering is normal for somebody's house, or whether it's because it's going on inside his property, or whether it's because it's a constant as opposed to the fluctuating noise of the traffic. And then, depending on which view you take, that will determine whether you're okay with saying, well, the daycare's always been there, you can't suddenly interrupt and protest. I realize that I didn't mention one point which was asked about. For some reason, I ended up excluding it from my notes. I'll just mention it now. And that is the question of, when are you sleeping? Are you really sleeping, you know, all the time when you say, I'm going to protest? So they do discuss this. And they say, if a guy owns a business and the business is open during the day, but people can come early in the morning or late at night and that's called during the day, that will disturb people's sleep. Further, there are societies where there are siestas, or there are people who do, you know, work at night. They work late at night, and then they're going to sleep at odd hours. And therefore, it's very hard to say, well, I'm only doing this during the day, and therefore it's fine. Plus, you add the person who is ill into the mix. And at that point, you really lose the daytime, nighttime type of an argument. It becomes harder to sustain the argument that I'm only doing this by day. The last issue is eavesdropping. So just very briefly, because we're already hitting our time, there is a basic prohibition against eavesdropping on other people. I noted in number 14 that you're not allowed to look into somebody else's yard. We already talked about that. That's hezek ri'ah. There are various reasons for prohibiting eavesdropping. One is because it's like lashon hara. Just like you're not supposed to spread information about other people, you're spreading it to yourself. You're reducing their use of the property because they're going to be upset that they can be seen or, in this discussion, overheard. So the truth of the matter is that Meiri writes in source number 15 that passive eavesdropping is fine. What we are bothered by within Jewish law is trying to overhear somebody. But if they're talking really loudly, then, frankly, it's their problem, which is relevant in a couple of stories in the Torah, right? Sarah is sitting in the tent. The three visitors come to Abraham, and they're talking to Abraham about, you know, having a child, and she overhears. Hey, how is she overhearing? The answer is they were talking loudly enough for her to be able to hear. You know these tents. Another case, Yitzhak is talking to his son Esav and telling him, "I want to give the bracha. I want to give the blessing. You should go out and get food for me." And Rivka overhears what's going on. She finds out what's going on, and she goes and tells Yaakov, and the rest is history. So those are fine because they're not trying to overhear. They're licensed to be where they are. They're not, you know, hiding somewhere in order to overhear. And this is reflected in Canada's Federal Criminal Code in source number 16. Where they talk about use of devices that enable intercepting a private communication, but they say, let's say somebody has a hearing aid that's used to correct subnormal hearing to not better than normal hearing. As long as it's only correcting to normal hearing, you're fine if you happen to overhear, because it's their fault for speaking loudly. So the same thing is true here. If you have neighbors who are very loud, it's not your fault for having heard them. The next week's topic, Rabbi Ziering is going to speak. Rabbi Jonathan Ziering, the Sgan with our Beit Midrash, a brilliant and exceptional talent. You should make sure to catch it. The topic is competing kashrut organizations in Israel. And it should be a fun topic. Quiet, you're on camera. That'll be next.